Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Concern last week about crime in Prince George's County boiled over during a packed crime summit. Residents complained loudly about homicides, robberies, and the spike in carjackings. Well, tonight, we sit down with County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy, Prince George's County's top prosecutor. We have a lot of questions for her, and we are taking yours, too. Lines are open right now. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are taking calls all the way up until 8 o'clock. You can tweet me at HFisher, W-H-U-R, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher, Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So let's get right to the crime summit from last Thursday. What was your main takeaway from it?
Well, the county executive and the chief of police decided to have a crime summit, and I was invited to attend, which I was very grateful to be there. And I think the takeaway is that there are so many members of our community that have been impacted by crime, whether it's directly or indirectly, and they want to see a change. And then there are a lot of members of our community, and this didn't really get reported on as much as the individuals who expressed, you know, a lot of, you know, concern and anger and frustration, but there are a lot of residents who really want to be a part of the solution and recognize that, you know, the community, they're stakeholders, and they can also be a part of the crime reduction in our county. So it was a really, I think, thoughtful discussion. And while it was heated at times, I think that those emotions come from anger, from hurt, from pain. And so we appreciate all of that because we have to. They're members of our community, and we care about everyone. And so it was a really enlightening summit. I'm happy that I was able to be there and hear from the community and also share the work of my office and the things that we're doing to assist victims as well as hold perpetrators accountable.
I do want to talk about that, too. But as it relates to your role, what do you believe after really taking a hard dive? Certainly, I'm assuming that you did after Thursday. Did your perspective change after Thursday concerning crime and punishment in the county?
Well, you know, you have to understand that I didn't just go to that summit as the first time that I've met with or spoken to folks in the community.
Right. So, absolutely.
These were the sentiments that were expressed were not things that were, you know, foreign to me. So while I thought that it was important to hear from everyone, it is not unlike, you know, conversations that I've had with community members all across Prince George's County. So there is a lot of frustration, not just here. You have to remember the pandemic really has impacted so much of our society, including criminal behavior, unfortunately. And that's true not just here in this region, but all across the country. And so we could have had that discussion almost anywhere in America because crime, unfortunately, has, you know, grown to what I would consider unacceptable levels in our communities all across the country. So I am, you know, we continue to work hard. I mean, part of the issue we've had over the last couple of years is the pandemic has had an impact on the court system. For a long period of time in 2020 and 2021, the courts were not holding jury trials. And so those who were charged with the most serious crimes, we were unable to have trials for. So many of those individuals are currently are housed in our county jail. Some are on some level of pretrial release, awaiting their trial date. And the courts are moving, but they're not moving as fast as, we were pre-pandemic. And so there's a lot of work that all of us have to do to address not only the violent crime that has occurred, but the operational side, which is adjudicating those crimes. That has also been impacted by COVID.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy from Prince George's County about law and order, crime and punishment in the county. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. Tony, calling from District Heights. Thanks for calling, Tony. What's on your mind?
How you doing?
I'm good.
All right. I was just calling in reference to what Mr. Braveboy just talked about. I'm one of the victims of a violent crime. I was assaulted by a neighbor's relative. And I was hitting the head with a metal pipe and could have died. And this person is still on the street. On top of that, this person had already had 17 pending DWI charges. And I'm looking at it like if he would have been arrested for those charges, this would have never happened to me. And my case is coming up next month. It's kind of like attorneys play the devil game, they play the court game. But to me, this is a serious matter. And just like you said, the court maybe said it was backed up. But to me, this guy really needs to be off the street. I'm working with Mr. Fields, Joseph Fields. So that's the representative for the state. But, I mean, what happened to me, I could have died. This guy's still on the street. Like it's nothing, never happened.
Well, let's see what Ms. Braveboy has to say about that. Tony, thank you so much for your phone call. Ms. Braveboy.
Yeah, as I stated, you know, we are, there's a huge backlog of cases in Prince George's County and in courthouses across Maryland, but I can speak specifically to Prince George's County. And so I am looking forward, of course, to, seeking justice for the caller, and I know that ASA Fields is an attorney who is very, very good and tries to, put forth, of course, the best case to represent our victims and to ensure that individuals are held accountable for their actions. But again, it has been a slow process getting these cases set in for jury trials or for trial before a judge, even in some cases. And so we're working our way through it, and we hope to get justice for your caller.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy. One of the things that came out of the crime summit last week, one of the more vocal residents said, we need more police in the community. Do you believe that is the case?
I think that we could police differently. I know that our chief is, employing different strategies to address crime. But I think what people want to see, they want to know their officers. So I know that during the summer, maybe last year, there was an initiative where officers were getting out of their cars and walking the beats and meeting people, neighbors, community leaders and young people in the community where they are, so that there was an effort to have more interactions. That initiative, I think, should grow because I think overall, if there is a bigger presence of law enforcement in communities, I think it does serve as a deterrent to crime. And so I understand and I hear that individual who expressed the need and desire to have more presence in the community. I understand that and support that. I think one of the things that the county executive is doing is funding classes for our police department so that we can have more officers. There were a large number of officers who retired from the department We've seen that all across the country, but again, here in Prince George's County, we know that a large number of officers were eligible for retirement. They retired, and so we're now hiring new officers and getting them into the academy so that they can hit the streets. But I think it's very important that we aggressively do that. And the other thing that was stressed by the executive and the chief is that they are recruiting from the community. And I think that's so critically important that we have people who are culturally competent serving us and who care about the community, know the community, and can identify with the people in the community. And so when you have people who are from here, like I love going out because this is my home. You know, so everywhere in Prince George's County I feel comfortable in and I like going to. We want our officers to feel the same way about our community. And I think when we get more people who are homegrown, who know the area and identify with the people here, I think you'll see a different type of relationship between the community and the police department. And that presence will be felt because they'll feel like they know those officers. Hmm. So I agree that we can and the department can do more to show their presence in our community.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about law and order in Prince George's County with County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy. Let's talk to Shirley calling from District Heights. Shirley, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm calling in reference to the, first of all, the judicial system. Unfortunately, we want to believe in our judicial system, but it seems like the victims are always victimized. Domestic violence, you name it. It seems like we're always victimized. That young man that got hit by the pipe, he's going to be victimized when he goes to court. Nevertheless, we also have havens where I'm just going to speak on Walters Lane in particular. That BP gas station on Walters Lane should have been closed years ago. There have been many deaths there, robberies there, and the owners allow these things to go on right in the establishment. But and our police officers are doing the best that they can. But when political aspects plays a part, it ties their hands. So if we want, the community is more than willing to help out. But what can we do as a community? Well, we can tell the people, we can tell Angela, also Brooks, Executive Director's Office, but if nothing's being done, now BP gas station, those people don't live in our community. They don't give anything to our community, but they have created a haven where they do drug sales, gun transfers, you name it, they do it. And they know it. And nothing has been done yet. And as far as criminality, we got cars rolling around with blackout windows from the windshield to the back window. Why aren't they just being pulled over for that? You may find what you're looking for.
Hmm. Shirley, thank you so much for your phone call. I do want to piggyback on something that Shirley just said. There has been, since the murder of George Floyd, a movement to, and even before that, you've discussed it on this program as one of your own initiatives, to develop a more holistic way of dealing with crime and punishment in this community. Pandemic notwithstanding, however, the county executive has said, not just last week, but in recent weeks, that a lot of the major crime issues that are happening in Prince George's County are happening by young people, minors, particularly these carjackings. Based on what I saw at the crime summit, some folks are like, you know, holistic approach be damned. If they are beating up and breaking bones of my grandmother on my front porch.
Yeah, I think we need to separate that issue. Let me just say this. For young people who are committing violent crimes, they are and should be held accountable. And they go, so if they are, let's say at the age of 16 and up, if they are charged with a violent crime with a weapon, they are charged as adults by police officers. And then there's something called a waiver hearing, and then the courts get involved to determine whether or not the child will remain in adult court or get waived down to juvenile court. But bottom line is that those individuals, our office, we're holding them accountable. They are being charged and tried, whether it's in adult court or in juvenile court, and they are given appropriate sentences based on the totality of the circumstances. If they are waived down to juvenile court, the juvenile court has a process to determine what the appropriate sentence or sanctions would be for that individual. So what I will tell you is that for those young people who have been adjudicated, we have not seen the type of recidivism that I think people kind of hear about. In fact, Prince George's County's recidivism rate when it comes to juveniles is actually below the state average. So we are doing quite well in addressing the needs and issues of young people who are committing offenses while we're holding them accountable. So you can hold someone accountable and still give them the resources and the services that they need so that they don't commit offenses in the future.
Hold your point, if I may, Ms. Braveboy. I'm going to let you finish your point. I need to take a quick break. Also,
sure.
Walter calling from Maryland. We're going to talk to you. Autumn calling from D.C. We're going to talk to you as well. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking to Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy. Going to take a quick break, but don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. That includes tonight's program. It'll be on our website after 8:30. Don't forget, download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. If you're on the phone, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. John Mons is next. I'm Harold Fisher. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm sitting down with Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy, the county's top prosecutor. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, Ms. Braveboy, you were talking about recidivism and young lawbreakers in the county. You can finish your point, please.
Yeah, so my point is we believe in accountability. We believe in holding people accountable. We believe in providing the appropriate sanctions. And we believe also in rehabilitation. And so we think that we have to do it all. We can't just say we're going to punish them knowing that at some point they're going to come back out into the community and we don't want them to commit the same offenses. So rehabilitation has to be a part of the equation. And you can do both, and we have to do both in order to protect our community.
So if let's say that if we take what you're saying about the recidivism rate in Prince George's County and young people as gospel, then who's minting all these new bad young folks?
Well, what I will say is that we have a lot of young people from, whether they're from Prince George's County, or really a lot of them, unfortunately, are coming over from the District of Columbia. And I'm not blaming the district. I'm one of those young people that came from the district. I'm a native Washingtonian, was born in D.C., but I grew up in Prince George's County. And so what we have found is that a lot of young people are coming across the border, committing crimes, and are going back across the border. And it's very difficult. It has been very difficult for us to, number one, get those young people arrested so that they can come and stand for trial. And also, we want to make sure that D.C. is providing services to these young people as well, because they're committing crimes in D.C. and then they're coming across the line committing crimes in Prince George's County. So, but for those who we have been able to hold accountable because we have them detained and we've been able to, you know, hold a merits hearing, that's what it's called in juvenile court, a merits hearing, we have been very successful in ensuring that those young people are not reoffending. And again, those are not my numbers. Those are the state's numbers. So just the State Department of Juvenile Service provides us with their independent review of cases that are filed in Prince George's County. And it is their review of our cases that shows that we are doing a very good job. In fact, we're, again, doing better than the state, the rest of the state, with our young people.
Let me go back to the phone.
There's a lot of young people.
Yes.
So I don't want to, you know, paint a rosy picture. They're just a lot of young people, and they are unique, meaning it's not like one person. And we have some instances where we have repeat offenders, but we have just a lot of young people engaging in very violent and risky behavior.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Autumn calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Autumn. What's on your mind?
Hey, sir. So my question was, what's the limited amount of officers that are patrolling Prince George's County community, the ones that are arresting people and, you know, taking them to jail and charging them, and they go to court, and then these cases get dropped. What exactly are we doing to remedy that? Because when people see that they can do these things and get back out, they continue these behaviors. And I know that we talk about services for young people, but if they aren't utilizing the services, what's the next step to hold them accountable for the actions that they have done? Because if they're not taking the services of mentoring and therapy and whatever other services are put in line for them to be rehabilitated, then what's next?
Well, let me just say this. To answer the last part first, is that I said in Prince George's County, what we're seeing is that young people are taking very seriously their opportunity to have rehabilitation and given therapy and other things. So I feel like we are misrepresenting our young people to say that they're not, you know, accepting or receiving or appreciating the opportunities they have to be rehabilitated. For the most part, they are. There are very few young people that are committing multiple crimes. So I just want to make sure that that is understood, because unfortunately there had been a narrative out there that is just simply untrue. The majority of young people who get in trouble, who are adjudicated, receive some type of sanction, they may get therapy even while they're incarcerated. And remember, the juvenile system, if your listeners are not familiar with it, it is actually based on rehabilitation. It is not for punishment. The juvenile system in Maryland does, the focus is rehabilitation. And while young people are sometimes, depending on the type of offense they've committed, they are committed to a hardwired secure facility or, you know, a detention center, they still receive therapy while they're there. And again, the vast majority of kids who are in those situations, they actually do receive and appreciate and become better citizens after going through that process. There are some that don't. That is absolutely true. There are some that don't accept that level of intervention. And for those young people, you know, they continue to be held or given other services outside of the detention center, depending on how long their sentence is. But I really think that, there had been this narrative out there that all of the kids are committing, you know, multiple crimes and no one's being held accountable. And honestly, that's just not true. That's just not true. But we do have a large number of young people who are not going to school. And so when you have young people who are not being stimulated mentally, they're getting their stimulation emotionally. So they're out there on the streets trying to get that emotional high, or doing carjackings, robberies, and all of these other negative things. We need to get our kids in school. We need to get them focused on their future, on learning, because a lot of these issues, again, came out around the pandemic. The one thing we know that happened during the pandemic is that we didn't have in-person learning, and that really impacted so many of our young people. So we can't ignore how the pandemic has really, I think, negatively impacted young people, especially those who need extra attention because they may be dealing with a mental health issue, or they may be dealing with trauma. They may be living in a difficult situation, and it is traumatizing to live in difficult situations. That doesn't mean that you should go out and carjack somebody or rob somebody or try to shoot someone or carry a gun. It doesn't mean any of those things. But it does mean that we have to understand that that's what we're dealing with. So it's not just one kid or two kids. It's several kids. And if you look at the truancy rates, probably all across the DMV, Maryland, and across the country, they're higher than they were pre-pandemic, which means we have a lot of young people out there who are throwing their future away because they are not engaged in learning. And education is really the number one crime prevention tool. If someone has an education, they're unlikely to engage in crime. I'm not saying that people who are educated don't engage, but for the most part, if you're educated and you're receiving your education, you're not going to risk your future.
Okay.
But a lot of our young people are not in that position at this time. We got to get them back there.
Autumn, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Walter, calling from Maryland. Walter, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, good evening, Harold. Ms. Braveboy. Yeah, I'm going to be very brief. I have three points I want to hit. First on Ms. Braveboy, discussing the solutions for to rehabilitate these kids. I was watching yesterday on the news. There's a gentleman down in Wilmington, North Carolina. He's taken the step forward to hire gang members. He's George Taylor, has a brewery, just started up a brewery. 85 employees, and 65 of them are gang bangers and stuff, different groups and stuff. I think that's a very positive force, and he discussed how we have to change our vision on how we try to rectify some of this violence. I'm very in tune with that. And on the third point, the third topic I have here is sometime, well, back in the 80s, the governor put forth, he reiterated the stand your ground, and these people going to Disney World, getting cars jacked, all that stuff. So stand your ground put in and propelled force meets force. And so if I'm in that environment where that lady was beat up and kicked the other day out here in Prince George County, and I've been there since, I shot all three of those kids. I shot them. Because somewhere they're going to have to learn. You know, you're not respecting my grandmother, my aunt. You know, this lady's 60 years old. And as Ms. Braveboy said, they get this training and get this this resource to try to better themselves. But you cannot keep on disrespecting your own community, yourself, people, and then you point to the police talking about police brutality. You can't do it. So I'm going to help bury you. Thank y'all.
Thank you so much. So yep. Walter just made a really interesting point. And yes, the attack on that senior citizen was horrific. As we know, she had, you know, two broken bones. She was traumatized. She did run toward a neighbor's house, and we saw that she had been tackled. So, you know, let's do a little law and order here, Miss Braveboy. If a neighbor had come out of the house and attempted to defend another neighbor who is being attacked by these young people, and as Walter said, shot every last one of them, would you have prosecuted him?
Well, let me just say this. In Maryland, We do have a use of force, a self-defense statute, which extends to others. So you can defend yourself or others with force if force is being used against you. That force has to be proportional, meaning you can't, let's say, if someone is using their fists, you can't come out necessarily, depending on, again, the totality of the circumstances, and use a gun, because there are certain duties to de-escalate, to try to, you know, mitigate before deadly force is used. So what I would say is that we'd have to look at the totality of the circumstances. We'd have to look at what is reasonable under those circumstances to determine whether or not if someone would have shot all of those young people who, you know, engage in that horrific behavior, you know, whether or not that was justified. So we'd have to evaluate that. And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to do that on this show because, again, I have a duty to really evaluate all of the facts and circumstances before making that type of decision. But I would say is that self-defense is a defense, even if you're defending someone else. But the level of force that's used has to be reasonable under the circumstances.
And I understand that, and I respect that. But I think what I heard, and you can tell me if you heard the same thing, that what Walter was expressing was a level of impatience with crime. He is fed up. We heard it last week. We didn't have to wait until the crime summit last week. We are constantly seeing these things. And let me say, this isn't a Prince George's County problem. This is an American problem. Okay.
Yeah.
That we know that. But we are talking to the top prosecutor in this little pocket of America called Prince George's County. Okay.
Yeah.
And so as a result, my concern is that at some point the Walters of Prince George's County are going to grow impatient with the foolishness, and I think that, you know, we could see an expanded problem down the road of law-abiding citizens and the like, just, you know, being sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Right. I mean, look, we're fed up, you know, but, you know, my job is to seek justice. And when you do that, you have to be fair and you have to look at everything. And the one thing that we have to look at is what is causing this? What is causing this level of crime? This level of lawlessness. And I think we can trace it back, as we have all over this country, to the pandemic. And it wasn't the pandemic in and of itself. It was something that happened. I think a lot of people lost hope. And when you lose hope, you'll do anything. And that's what we saw, is people doing anything. So people who, you know, were living on the margins felt even more insecure. Young people who may have been not doing so well in school were doing horribly in school or just not attending at all. And so now that they may be trying to get back, because we're seeing violence in our schools as well, they're coming back to school. They may be reading or performing below their grade level. And so that's a level of frustration that they had. And they're taking it out on other students, on our teachers, administrators. So we have to do much better at diagnosing the problem and staying focused on addressing the problem, which in many ways is a societal problem, which is people who are addicted to drugs, people who are dealing with mental health and behavioral issues, people who have been traumatized in some way, who we need to reach out to, who we do need to provide services to. That doesn't mean that we accept their lawlessness at all, And we don't accept their lawlessness. You know, our jail, we're up to over 900 people at our county jail. The reason why there's so many people there is because we've had so much violent crime. And even though we haven't had trials for the most part, well, we're starting to have them now, even though for nearly 2 years we had maybe just a few months where we were able to have trials before the courts reopened back in October, it has been, we've had to keep people locked up because we are concerned that they are a danger to our community. So there are not over 900 people right now at our county jail. I can tell you that 93% of them are charged with very, very violent offenses like murder or attempted murder, carjacking, first-degree assault, armed robbery, rape, child abuse, domestic violence. You know, it is, but many of those individuals, and the county executive really pressed this, about a third of them use some type of psychotropic drug, which means that they have a diagnosed mental health issue.
Hmm.
About 70% of the people who come into our jail have alcohol in their system, or drugs, meaning they are soothing something. And I'm not making any excuses for them. What I'm saying is that we have a real problem with people who have very little hope, who have addictions, who need help. And we have to do a better job as a society and government and community to get them the help that they need so that they don't commit these offenses. Mm-hmm. Because it's really difficult once they're in prison or once they are arrested. I'm going to do my job.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my job. But that's not going to make them any stronger or better people, because now they're going to be trapped in a system where the main focus in the adult system is punishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we're going to do our jobs. Every single day, we hold people accountable. We ask that violent offenders remain in prison, in jail. We have a 98% conviction rate on our homicides. I don't know why anyone would want to commit a homicide in Prince George's County. We close homicides higher than almost any jurisdiction in the country, and we have a 98% conviction rate. Yet people are still committing homicides in Prince George's County.
Yeah.
So we can do our job, the best job we can do, but when someone is mentally ill, they don't understand. They're not rationalizing the fact that we're going to send them away for years and years and years because they have a mental health issue.
Yeah.
So we really, and that's why I said it's not. I am passionate about it too. I am, when I look at things like these young people beating up this older woman, it breaks my heart and it angers me. And we will, to the extent that they are charged, found and charged, we will hold them accountable. But mm-hmm. we also have to get to the why. Why are you out here doing this? Because that's how we'll help prevent the next person from committing a similar offense.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tony calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling, Tony. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Harold, for taking my call, and hello, Ms. Brayboy. My point is, we wonder how they got there. From my perspective, I'm going to tell you how we got there, why they're so out of control, is because we have a lenient judicial system. And they know how to get around the law. They know if they're under a certain age, they can commit a violent felony and most times get away with it. My suggestion is I hope that someone create a law where if you're under 18 years old and you commit a violent crime such as murder, okay, you put you in a juvenile facility if he's not charged as an adult, and then when he put him in a juvenile facility, and then when he turned 18, continue on with that same punishment for that same crime. And my second point is, well, I have several points. I'm so sorry I couldn't make it the other night. I had an emergency for the crime summit. But I wish we could treat carjacking as we did an Amber Alert, because that would bring a halt to all these carjackings if everybody's out on the road looking for particular cars with particular tag numbers. That would bring all that to a halt immediately.
You know what? I think that's a great idea. And what is the caller's name?
That's Tony calling from Bowie. That is
Tony.
That is innovation.
That is innovation. I like that idea. In fact, I am going to share that. I actually I created a carjacking task force here in Prince George's County. The chair is actually one of my deputies, Terry Paler. And that is something, I think they have a meeting this Friday, and I'm going to ask them to discuss that, suggestion, because I think he's definitely on to something. I hope that Tony can call back in maybe and provide his information, his email address or phone number, so that we can get in touch with him.
I can hold on the line.
Tony, I'll have the producer get your information, and then we'll pass it on to Miss Brave Boy. But
that's a great idea, actually. Yeah. I mean, we can use technology more in fighting crime. I know that there are all of these, surveillance cameras out in our communities, and oftentimes we're able to solve crimes as a result of surveillance video. But using technology in this way, I think, is really, really smart, because he's right. People will look and say, okay, that's the license plate. That's the type of car we're looking for. I'm going to look for that vehicle. And I think that helps the citizens also get involved in fighting crime. So I appreciate that suggestion, and we'll take it to the task force.
Yeah, the producer is working on getting his information right now. And let me say, as you said in the beginning of the program, as it relates to what happened at the Crime Summit, that, yes, the getting the community actively involved, not as vigilantes, obviously, but getting them involved with crime, prevention ideas. And, we need more big brain ideas, like Tony just suggested, to really help curtail this difficult issue. The other thing that I did want to ask you, I wanted to get your reaction to the passing of the ghost gun bill in Maryland. Do you think it will help the police chief in Prince George's County? Malik Aziz has been very pointed in talking about the rise in the confiscation of ghost guns just this year. More this year, and we are only, a third of the way through compared to all of last year.
Oh, yeah. Look, ghost guns are on the rise. These are unserialized weapons, but they are guns. They work the same way as guns, but they were completely unregulated, meaning that someone who would be not eligible to own or possess a weapon in Maryland can buy a gun. And they're like it's almost like a sort of a manufactured kind of kit that you would get at your home. And those kits were unregulated. and so someone who, let's say had a mental health issue and could not purchase a weapon, or who had a DV issue and could not own a weapon, or someone who was under 18 or under 21, excuse me, and could not possess a weapon, those individuals are currently purchasing guns, these ghost guns, and these firearms are shipped to them, to their homes, and then they could put those guns together like you would erect, any other kind of
like an erector set,
and they're about 80% put together, so it's very simple to make it operable, and they were being used in crimes, in carjackings, in robberies, in homicides. In fact, the shooting that occurred in Montgomery County at the school in Montgomery County, that individual purchased a ghost gun through the internet and used it, you know, unfortunately, on a classmate. So what we're seeing all around the country, but we are concerned about, of course, what we're seeing here in Prince George's County and in the state of Maryland, we said we've got to put an end to these ghost guns. And so they are now going to be regulated, and in a couple of years, they will be completely banned from our state. And I'm very much in favor of that. That was one of the priority bills for my administration this year. We testified on behalf of that legislation, and we are very happy that it passed. So we are extremely happy, and we want to be able to hold these manufacturers accountable because they are putting guns in the hands of people who would otherwise not be qualified to own them.
I only have a minute or so left. So your final thoughts about where we are in Prince George's County, you know, moving forward, dealing with this rise of crime. From your perspective, you are not, you know, an enforcer. You are a prosecutor. You don't arrest, you know, you prosecute. Some final thoughts from you.
So what I will say is that we have seen a decrease in homicides. I think that's something that, you know, we think is a good sign. Unfortunately, we still see, you know, carjackings on the rise, and so we are working again really hard to hold those individuals accountable. And trust me, when we do have those trials, we get convictions there, and we do ask for significant sentences in carjacking cases. I think the issue has been that we simply haven't had the number of trials that we are used to having because the courts were shut down. But as the courts reopen and we are able to try more cases, we are going to zealously try these carjacking cases. We know that we will get many convictions, and we will ask for severe penalties and punishment for those who are committing these offenses, because we have to send a message that carjackings will not be tolerated in Prince George's County, and I'm committed to doing that, and so are my prosecutors.
Your staff will be getting Tony's information. We want to thank Tony for his idea. Prince George's County State's Attorney Aisha Braveboy, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, April 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.